a boxer, a championship, and a mysterious house. For one Jim Figg, his heavyweight championship of the world came with a challenge that was more than he bargained for. I'm Reba Wissner, and I'm a television music historian. And while most commentaries on this volume will discuss many different facets of a series and the episodes, mine will focus especially on the music and sound. So sit back while I take you through an oral tour of The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes. The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes was set to premiere on November 5th, 1972 in the United States, and a few days earlier on October 31st, 1972 in Canada. This was supposed to be the sixth episode of the season, but Scott Skelton and Jim Benson, in their book Rod Serling's Night Gallery, an After Hours Tour, note that it was postponed to January 7th, 1973 in the United States, but do not give a reason why, and I cannot find any evidence for it. However, given that Skelton and Benson are the experts here, I'll defer to them. Skelton and Benson mentioned that members of the music department were changed between season 2 and season 3, but music supervisor Hal Mooney remained. I discuss a bit about Mooney in my commentary on the Night Gallery season 2 set, so be sure to check that out. Another familiar name in the music department was also retained, Eddie Sauter, who was credited on the cue sheets for season 2 as Ed Sauter. The music for The Red Velvet Ropes was composed by Sauter, who became the series season 3 house composer, even penning the new season's theme music, which sounds more like a cacophonous screeching horror film theme than a theme for a television series that was now supposed to feature action elements rather than supernatural stories. Like most of the composers for the series, Sauter was a jazz musician by trade. He composed and arranged music for famous swing band leaders such as Red Norvo, Artie Shaw, Tommy Dorsey, Woody Herman, and Benny Goodman. Additionally, he was a trained drummer and trumpet player and a band leader himself, co-leading the Sauter Finnegan Orchestra with Bill Finnegan. Kind of fun that Sauter then composed the music for the Finnegan's Flight episode, which I'll also be talking about. Jack Laird was drawn to Sauter for season 2, as he had come into contact with his scoring for jazz musician Stan Getz's album Focus, released in 1962, and his score for Arthur Penn's neo-noir crime film Mickey 1 from 1965. But he and Sauter also went way back. In 1947, Laird and Sauter wrote an unproduced musical. Laird commented on the composer, quote, "Eddie Sauter is the best intuitive dramatic composer I've ever worked with," end quote. However, Sauter was less than thrilled to be working on Night Gallery. Composer Gil Millay recounted about Sauter's reaction when greeting him in the scoring room for season 2. Sauter replied, quote, "This is all bullshit. It isn't classical music, and it isn't jazz. It isn't anything," end quote. Sauter's score for this 25-minute episode clocks in at about 11 minutes and 16 seconds, one of the longer scores for this season. Including the main and end titles, this episode has 11 cues, 8 of them in the episode itself. 2 others are the main and end titles, and the third is what's called a bumper, or a short piece of music that plays between the acts during a commercial break to remind the viewer of what show they are watching, or tell viewers who might have tuned in during the show what show is on. This, of course, was before cable television, where you can search and see what's actually on. The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes was based on a 1968 short story by Edward T. Hawk called The Ring with the Velvet Ropes. Notice, no color is mentioned in the title, though in the story, the ropes are black velvet. We have no idea why Robert Malcolm Young changed the color of the ropes from black to red in the teleplay, and in the teleplay, as you see in the episode, the color red plays a very important role. From Roderick's towel to the color of Roderick's furniture, And you might infer the color of blood, as blood is often spilled during boxing. However, on television, it was kind of hard to show something graphic like that, so this was a nice placeholder. However, all of the characters' names remain the same in both the script and the short story, except for Roderick, who in the short story is named Rodrigo Blanco. There are a few differences between the teleplay and the short story, other than the color of the ropes and Rodrigo's or Roderick's name. First, the short story has no supernatural elements, which supposedly the network wanted to get rid of throughout the third season episodes, but did not. Rather, in the short story, it was essentially a kidnapping. In the short story, we hear about Rodrigo Blanco, which is his name in the short story, much earlier than in the teleplay. The most striking change, however, are the endings of both the short story and the teleplay. In the teleplay, Jim wins and now has to fight every other winner until he loses. In the short story, however, Jim essentially tricks Rodrigo to let him leave before fighting a return bout with him. Jim leaves the house, announces his retirement while he's gone, and Rodrigo, so dismayed, commits suicide by hanging himself with the red velvet ropes upon hearing about Jim's retirement on the news. Janot Swag directed the episode, and he was no stranger to the series, having directed a whopping 19 episodes during its run. If the premise of this episode of fighting someone to prove you are the best at what you do seems familiar, that's because there was another Serling take on this in the Twilight Zone episode A Game of Pool from 1961, though that one focused on being the best at, you guessed it, pool, rather than boxing. Serling introduces the episode, as he always does, and he is accompanied by a musical cue called Serling Intro Ropes. Another thing that you might recognize is Serling's penchant for stories that feature boxing, which there were many in and out of the Twilight Zone throughout Serling's career. The ring with the red velvet ropes begins after the short story does, cutting out the fight scene that leads to boxer Jim Figg, played by Gary Lockwood, the victorious heavyweight champion of the world, defeating Big Dan Engel, played by Jeetu Kumbuka. This is one of many television episodes in different series focused on boxing, but this takes a slightly different take. Big Dan is injured, badly, and has been rushed to the hospital for surgery. However, Jim swears that Big Dan has come to his dressing room to tell him he is no more of a champion than he was before he was defeated. We see Big Dan in the mirror as Jim looks in it, and we hear the cue, "Battered Face." This cue is comprised of violin, and then soon, cello tremolos. The word tremolo comes from the Italian word tremolare, which means to shake. So tremolos are the rapid playing of a note repeatedly. In the case of a bowed string instrument like the violin, it's as if the player's bow is shaking on the string. String tremolos tend to appear in any sort of scene where there's dramatic tension, often leading to some sort of big reveal, murder, or attack. But here, we see what appears to be Big Dan paying Jim a visit and giving him a warning. We also hear what sounds like a recorder, which was originally a Renaissance wind instrument, but may be more familiar to you as the thing you or your children or grandchildren had to play hot cross buns on in the first grade. Combined, these instruments create a spooky, airy sound, with the music almost out of tune, with what sounds like the pervasive punching of a punching bag by percussionist Big Dan tells Jim that he just thinks he's the champion. This may be a foreshadowing of what's to come. Whether or not it was intentional, we hear what sounds like an allusion to the theme of One Step Beyond played on the recorder, you know, the one that was reused in the second season of The Outer Limits. In both cases, the one that plays every time supernatural or weird happened. I can't confirm that this was deliberate on Salter's part, but I also can't deny that it's there either. Jim tells his manager, Max, played by Ralph Monza, that Big Dan came to see him, but he thinks Jim has taken too many punches to the head because Big Dan's in surgery now and could not possibly be in Jim's dressing room. He tells Jim to go shower, and the recorder music underscore continues, soon moving to a violin rendition of that One Step Beyond / Outer Limits theme. This is followed by harp glissandos, which are slides up and down the scale. Usually in film and television, harp glissandos are used for dream sequences or flashbacks, but not here. Here it's used as Jim's traveling music. Jim goes into the shower but emerges somewhere else. A fancy suite and a servant named Hayes, played by Charles Davis, is waiting for him with a towel. Now we hear a violin that soon moves into a melody played by some sort of electronic instrument. I can't actually place this instrument, but it sounds like the kind of music that Millay would have written for season two. This cue is called Jim's Visitor, and also features ascending and descending lines on that spooky electronic instrument with a violin melody featuring short notes. These short notes could mirror the kind of short, evasive answers Hayes is giving him. Soon, a piccolo joins in with a piercing, almost out-of-tune melody atop the rest of the cue as Jim tries to figure out where he is and how he got there. Soon, the music abruptly stops in favor of the loudly dubbed sound of waves from the large body of water upon which the house they are in is situated. Jim immediately thinks he's been kidnapped, and Hayes won't tell him much, like how he got there, except that he is now the guest of Mr. and Mrs. Roderick Blanco, names he has never heard before. All he tells him is that Mrs. Blanco would like him to join her in the game room. As he searches for a phone, Jim that is, he hears an incessant punching noise, as if someone's punching a punching bag. This punching bag sound bears a notation in the script that says, quote, "And under his roar," meaning Jim's asking about his clothes, "we begin to hear the rat-tat-tat of a punching bag." Note, this will continue as cued throughout much of the show. The sound will always be the same perspective, near, yet out of reach. The rhythm of the bag will never vary, end quote. This is particularly interesting because if you pay very close attention to the sound of the episode, you'll notice that sometimes the sound of the punching bag is actually dubbed a bit louder than in other scenes. After looking out the window and seeing that he's stranded on some sort of island, Jim soon meets Sandra Blanco, Roderick's wife, played by Joan Van Ark, in the game room. As we might, Jim thinks he's been kidnapped, though how he got there does not add up, just coming out of the shower. Sandra is effusive and doesn't admit to much, only that she'd seen his fight at home the night earlier. Odd, since it wasn't televised. And tells Jim that Roderick will explain why he's there. Jim tries to pick up the phone, and the cue Jim's Visitor, complete with eerie electronic music, returns, this time with the instrument taking us up and down a whole tone scale, also used in films and television for dream sequences or flashbacks. Soon, the punching bag stops, and Sandra indicates that that means Roderick is coming. Roderick, played by Chuck Connors, appears, accompanied by music that is dark and sinister, here played mainly by cellos. He is described in the script as, quote, "a dark, powerfully built man, about Jim's size, no more than 30 in appearance. Arrogance to dwarf an Alp, egoism adorning every move and gesture. George Sanders sans accent and avec physique. Von Stroheim with lifts. Contempt and madness dueling in his eyes," end quote. This guy, you don't want to mess with, and the dark music reinforces that. Jim quickly finds out what Big Dan was warning him about. Roderick wants to fight Jim to prove he is the real champion. Roderick tells Jim that he knocked Big Dan out within the first minute of the second round of their private match, keeping him the champion, and that Big Dan was only pretending to be the champion for 4 years to not tell people about Roderick, and no one questioned it. The only way to be the real champion, Roderick says, is to beat him in a private match in his private ring. This, he says, is standard protocol, as he boxed and defeated every other supposed champion before Jim. At this point, we hear a cue called Challenge to Bout, which lasts for almost 3 minutes, the longest cue in the episode. Roderick tells Jim he cannot leave the house until he's boxed him in his regulation ring with red velvet ropes, which are most decidedly not regulation. The low, sinister cello music returns as Roderick tells him his plans. Jim angers him and tells him that there will be no managers and no public displays, as Jim wants, and descending violin and percussion are added to the mix. We soon move into a dark room, and Roderick picks up a torch in an Olympic-like ceremony as the cue continues, and the music now has a snare drum added to create the sound of a march. An organ joins in as Roderick lights a ring of fire with the torch. The organ plays repetitive music that heightens the same music in the other instruments, but also gives the scene a gothic feel, as the organ is dubbed louder than the other instruments, and they're in this dark room. Roderick convinces Jim to come closer to see the book in which he has in front of him, and the music moves from long notes to short ones, creating a sense of suspense. Roderick coaxes Jim to the podium and shows him the book in which Big Dan Anger testified through an affidavit that he fought a match with Roderick and was defeated in a knockout. As Roderick continues to tell him what else the book holds, there's a short snippet of music that moves up and down repeatedly by half step, and each of these snippet groups will move up by half step sequentially during the conversation to build suspense. The snippet shortens as soon as the organ joins in when Roderick tells Jim that once he signs the document testifying that he lost, it will rest forever in the book between the flyleaf and Big Dan's affidavit. Roderick tells Jim that they will fight Monday and that whatever he needs to prepare will be provided for him and that the winner will take all. As Roderick says, winner take all, the organ plays a thick dissonant chord, what I might describe as crunchy, akin to what we call a stinger chord. In film and television, a stinger chord is a single dissonant chord that sonically highlights an event. It doesn't always have to be dissonant, but more often than not it is. Jim decides to fight Roderick on Monday just to get out of there, and who can blame him? Roderick walks away to the snare drum marching sound, the organ music, and after refusing to answer Jim when he asks what all is in Winner Take All, the torch extinguishes and the scene ends. Soon, Jim heads to bed and finds Sandra in his room, who wakes him up. At this moment, we have the cue called Central Sandra. The music begins with a low rumbling by the double basses as Sandra strokes Jim's chin as he sleeps. Quickly, though, we hear a lyrical, almost romantic flute melody. This is a kind of musical cliche that's used in film since the 1930s and television to represent beautiful women on screen. It's easily recognizable, and I bet that if you were not watching the screen but could hear the music, you could probably know that Sandra or some other beautiful woman is on the screen. Typically, this kind of romantic melody is scored using violins, but flutes or other high instruments coded feminine in film are also used, as we hear here. Jim wakes up startled, and the music abruptly changes to a stinger, but the romantic music returns pretty quickly, now adding violin and harp. Sandra tells Jim that not only does she think that he can beat Roderick, but that Roderick thinks so too because he's nervous, and she's never seen him that nervous before. She says that Roderick has never been defeated, but Jim should let him win. Jim, who has never thrown a match in his life, tells her that he won't do it, even though Sandra said the stakes are much higher now. She's not afraid that Jim will hurt Roderick. No, she's afraid of something far worse, but won't elaborate. Shortly after, it's time for the dreaded, anticipated match, depending on whose point of view it is. Use of music in a television or episode or film can draw the viewer's attention in two ways. Aside from the obvious, in which the musical construction could be startling, like with a stinger chord, if the episode has hardly any music, but then suddenly music appears, that can draw the viewer in. Conversely, if there's a lot of music, but suddenly a scene where you would expect to hear music doesn't have it, then the silence will draw in the viewer's attention. The latter is what happens in this episode in the fight scene at the end. This scene is one where we might expect there to be music, and action music no less, but Salter, and likely music supervisor Hal Mooney played a role in this too, did not score the scene, only to capture the eeriness of it all, but also to increase the drama and to deny the audience any emotional closure. Unsurprisingly, Jim beats Roderick and we find out his fate. Roderick is counted out, and then the music finally returns. The music is now at its eeriest, with a clarinet playing its lowest register, probably shifting at some point to a bass clarinet, attempting to play some sort of melody, but it's failing, accompanied by several types of percussion. It seems that Jim is now the real champion, and the marching music from challenge to bout returns. As Roderick's now decaying body is turned over, and Jim is given Roderick's robe, the cellos and double basses enter, with the organ soon following. There are multiple melodic lines occurring at once, illustrating Jim's disbelief and disorientation. Roderick, it turns out, had taken the championship in 1861 by beating Jem Mace and successfully defending it until Jim came along and beat him. Sandra tells Jim that winner takes all now as long as he wins, and the recorder music from Jim's visitor returns. Roderick's remains are gone, and the episode ends to the sound of the low cello and bass music and the persistent punching bag sounds now made by Jim preparing for his next bout or bouts. This particular score is quite different from the others that Salter composed for the series. The whereabouts of the musical scores and sketches to this episode and all of the others are missing, or at least I have not found their location yet. So I cannot verify some of these instruments, especially the electronic ones, since Salter was not known to compose using electronic instruments. It's possible that the scores may have been destroyed in the Great Universal Fire, though I can't confirm this, and I really hope it's not true. I do hope someday that I'll be able to find them. In any case, I hope that you enjoyed this musical after-hours tour of a sonic gallery like no other. Until next time.
All right, now go to that corner. 3, 4, 5. Why don't you stop it? You saw what was happening. Why didn't you throw in a towel? Don't you care? You're his wife. Nobody should take a beating like that. Nobody! The champion is dead. Long live the champion. Taken the title from Jem Mace in 1861 and having successfully defended it ever since. Until tonight.
watching.
For how long?
As long as you win.